This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
What's up, everybody? It is a Tuesday edition of the OBP, the Orange Bloods podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, owner, publisher, content provider over at orangebloods.com and doing the damn thing today on the Yak Network. If you haven't downloaded the free Yak app on your iPhone, do that. Go to your store. It's free. The Yak. And you can listen to all of the podcasts that we do from orangebloods.com and throughout the Yak Network on our beautiful. It's pretty wonderful. It's a wonderful app. My man Brian Bartow did a fantastic job with the app. Download it. It's free. So if you didn't catch, oh, and by the way, this podcast brought to you by JFQ Lending. Go to jfqlending.com. Take advantage of the special offers they want to give you for listening to this podcast. $500 to cover appraisal. Wait, $500 and then covering all appraisal costs. So yeah, man, let them hook you up. So yesterday we did the Monday Overreaction podcast, Anwar Richardson and I, and it was a bit of a analysis of, you know, the bodies being all over the battlefield. It was truly a Monday overreaction show to what transpired at the end of the weekend, which was Urban Meyer relaying to Texas. Unless you believe that this is all coded BS, that, you know, we need to throw that out there. The conspiracy theory that exists is that Ohio State is still in their season, and in order for Urban Meyer to get some of the Ohio State mafia that he would like to bring with him to Texas, he would need to wait till after the season is over. So decline the job, and I'm using air quotes right now for decline. Decline the job and wait till the mafia could be more readily available so that you're not a distraction, and then you strike. Look, if that's happening, if that conspiracy theory is true, I'll seriously, like, when this thing's all said and done, like, stand up and tip my cap and worship at the Church of Del Conte for real. Nobody seems to have those vibes. Nobody, other than those that possess enough confirmation bias to will themselves into believing that potentially this Machiavellian plan is the one that's actually unfolding, from people who are typically not very Machiavellian, if we're being completely honest. So, although I don't include Urban Meyer in that, it is completely possible that the Machiavellian inside of Urban Meyer has he directed all of this. It's possible. It's possible. Seems unlikely. And so what ended up happening is everybody reacted to the aftermath of when you don't get your guy. You had the target presumably says no, and then Texas seemingly, like, and it's weird because this started before Urban Meyer gave Texas his decision. This was a thought that really towards the end of last week started to permeate a little bit out there. I saw certain media sources that have access to Del Conte who were reporting that, like, the Herman being done, not a definite thing. Statesman guys were all over that. And, you know, it really started to be a thing that Anwar specifically was receiving intel on while he was in Manhattan, Kansas, for the Kansas State game, that, you know, having a chance to be out there with the football team, it was only him and Brian Davis apparently that made the trip. He was hearing that this Herman rolling it back thing, if Meyer says no, is on the table specifically because the guys that might be the primary targets in an ideal world for Chris Del Conte, which would be Mario Cristobal and James Franklin. James Franklin being first, I think everybody believes, and Mario Cristobal being second. If either of those guys were having a season worth talking about right now, they would be the next candidate. Fully believe that Del Conte has relationships with both, and people from Del Conte's camp, sourcing from that camp, agrees with that. I think if you pulled Chris Del Conte alone privately and said, James Franklin, your boy, I hear he's your boy, I think he would tell you, yeah, he and I get along really well. What about Mario Cristobal? I hear that you guys are boys. I think he would say, yeah, I know Mario a little bit. I like him. Those are two guys that in a world where they're not a combined, what are they, like 2-9? I don't know. Maybe Oregon's not that bad. Oregon's like 3-2, and Penn State's having a season. But in a world where those two guys combine, one of them, if one of them's 5-1 right now, or anything other than, you know, straddling 500 at best, I think they're the guy. So what I wrote today, though, was that it's important for Texas to compartmentalize everything that's happened right now. It is important that Texas look at what it has in front of them and realize the advantages that exist. And there are some advantages. First of all, the Urban Meyer thing's out of the way. Unless there's this Machiavellian plan, you know what the answer is from Meyer. And the season's not over. What this allows, from my perspective, for Texas to be able to do is to do their homework. And they've got time. You know, when we think about the Charlie Strong coaching hire, the Tom Herman situation, and you know what? It was a little different because obviously you had LSU fighting Texas for Tom Herman's signature. But in retrospect, what Texas needed to do is have a better plan. But you had Mike Perrin, who wasn't really in a position to do his own due diligence and then say, this is the best candidate, and I stake my reputation as athletic director of this program on it. He just didn't have that kind of juice. He was the interim guy. And when we go back to Steve Patterson, what's interesting about what happened with Steve Patterson is that in addition to hooking up with Corn Ferry, he had a chance to spend a couple of weeks marinating on all of this. He had a chance to think about Art Briles and think about Jim Mora and to think about, obviously, Charlie Strong and all of the candidates. James Franklin was a guy that I think, you know, the tires were kicked on. And ultimately, Patterson and Corn Ferry like vetted this situation out, and then they said, well, we feel like Charlie Strong's the best candidate. That had a lot to do with poor decision-making and poor leadership than it did the idea of doing your homework. I love, personally, look, the coaching field is flawed because there's no obvious candidate. But sometimes the obvious candidate, see Tom Herman, isn't the right candidate. And what I would suggest is Texas has a luxury now that Tom Herman is still employed. He shouldn't be, because they wouldn't be pigeonholed right now had they'd already fired him. But then they score 69 on Kansas State. Less than 24 hours later, you know, you get a no from Urban Meyer. And suddenly, you're in a position where, oh, we should have done this and we should have done that. There's no reason for second guessing. Turn this inconvenience into a positive. As I wrote in my column for orangebloods.com this morning, I'm recording this on Tuesday, Tom Herman's been a human meat shield for the university for 2 months. He's been a meat shield for the last couple of weeks as this Urban Meyer thing has popped up and Chris Del Conte has completely hid from the public and the media. And Herman goes up and answers questions from Anwar about Urban Meyer and gives himself his own vote of confidences. And at the end of the day, Herman was just a meat shield while Texas did their thing behind the scenes. Well, Tom Herman's going to get paid over $400,000 this month. He can be a good servant of the university by remaining the coach and being the meat shield. And Del Conte and Kevin Eltliff and Eltief, excuse me, that's still a last name I got to practice. And Jay Hartzell, who essentially the Texas president, he's following the lead of the chairman of the Board of Regents and his athletic director. Hartzell's down for whatever they're down for. He's going to be a good president and trust the people who this is what they're there for. So I think if you're Texas, you know, this season is going to go into January. The last regular season games aren't until the 19th of December. If Urban Meyer tells you no, and you've already fired Herman, then every time you, like Matt Campbell today for Iowa State was asked about the Texas job, or at least behind the scenes, how's he supposed to answer that? His team plays in a Big 12 championship game in less than 2 weeks, and Tom Herman still has a job. So through Dennis Dodd, Campbell's camp is like, oh, he wouldn't take the Texas job. He only has an interest in Ohio State and Notre Dame. Okay, well, I only have an interest in Halle Berry and, you know, L. McPherson in their primes. No. Look, Matt Campbell has an agent. And Matt Campbell has common sense. And when you're Matt Campbell, there gets to be a time where you have to take advantage of your moment. You have to take advantage of your notoriety. You have to take advantage of the hotness of your brand because it doesn't always last forever. Look at James Franklin. Look at Mario Cristobal. Mario Cristobal won the Pac-12 last year and looked like, oh my God, Oregon's about to have the next big thing. He would have been the Texas coach if he could have maintained it even a little bit. And they're, you know, they've lost their last two games and they're not really a factor in any kind of Pac-12 or national conversation. And it's wah, wah, wah. This happens last year. Mario Cristobal is head coach at the University of Texas. So, you know, it is Matt Campbell's in this position where he has to say what he has to say right now. Do not tell me that if the University of Texas came to Matt Campbell and offered him the keys of the kingdom and increased his salary by 3 times what it currently is, the best way for one day, Matt Campbell, to get the Ohio State or Notre Dame jobs, if those are the dream jobs, having some success at a place like Texas would go a long way to that. Just like Brian Kelly is a guy that Texas could kind of look at and go, we should maybe kick the tires on that. He might say no, but he's had enough success now at Notre Dame that he's a bit of a guarantee on the box. If Texas wants to pay Matt Campbell $7 million a year to build up his resume, he'll take the job. So use common sense in a lot of ways with little things. Like the thing that Texas has going for them is that in telling people that Herman's going to keep the job now, they can kick tires on coaches without putting those coaches in under spotlights they don't want. Matt Campbell doesn't want to deal with this at the expense of Iowa State losing the Big 12 championship in what, 11, 12 days? You know, a guy like Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinator at Clemson. Look, whether or not you wanted to kick the tires on him or not, and I'll get to him in a little bit, this is a guy whose team is in the playoff hunt, and Dabo probably wouldn't take real kind to his offensive coordinator like becoming a distraction at the money end of the season. So I think that this is a luxury for Texas now. And I think that they don't have to be rushed. I think they look, because the early signing day, that thing's now, the 15th is going to come and go, and Texas is going to get the majority of its commitments look like they're going to sign the dotted line. They're going to be Longhorns. And what I think Texas now can feel like is that the clock was against them in a way with Meyer, because if you could get it all set up a week out from the first signing day, that would have been significant. But now that they can't, you cannot worry about what can't be done now. You cannot worry about what you cannot change. What Texas has to worry about is going out and making the best move it can make. The future of the program is at stake. Recruiting for the next three classes is at stake. The status quo cannot exist. And I'm not even going to go into that. I'm not going to go into why the status quo can't exist. I've done that in multiple podcasts. I wrote a column on Sunday about it. We are past the point of no return. So if you're Chris Del Conte and you're looking at candidates, who amongst all these flawed candidates is the best candidate? Now, I didn't rank these in order, really. Like, I don't know. I personally have a hard time saying who I think is the best guy, because I haven't exhausted that. I haven't done deep digs into Matt Campbell or James Franklin or Tony Elliott. I don't know. You know, there's vetting that would need to take place in order to figure out what the best decision is. But let's take a look at some of them, right? Let's talk about some names. And all of these guys are going to be college guys. I'm open-minded to an NFL guy. Here's my problem. I'm open to a younger version of an NFL guy. Somebody who is not going to look at recruiting as a pain in the ass. And the problem with that is that most of the young guys in the NFL that can do that and have a big enough profile that you would consider view themselves as NFL guys headed towards head coaching positions. You know, if the University of Texas is going to look at, let's say, an assistant coach at the pro level, and I've looked, man, I don't know. Unless you're talking about Gary Kubiak, unless you're talking about guys that don't have jobs now, I have a hard time looking at the head coaching list currently and finding a guy that has a contract situation that can be taken advantage of. Like, John Harbaugh has forever been my guy. Back when Texas hired Tom Herman in 2017, I was all about John Harbaugh. He was in the last year of his deal. The Ravens were not looking to pay him on the level of the best, highest coaches in both college football and I think he was making like $2.5 or $3 million or something like that. And none of it like long-term guaranteed, but now he's got a contract through 2024. Kyle Shanahan has a contract through 2025. You know, I think the guys that might, you could make a case for, because I think there was a time when John Harbaugh was interested potentially in moving to the college game. I don't think that time exists anymore. But back when his contract was in limbo and his brother was the headliner in college football, I mean, Jim Harbaugh is a big deal. He's less of a big deal now because Michigan can't beat Ohio State. But coming back from San Francisco, where he'd been to the Super Bowl and came within an eyelash of winning the Super Bowl, you know, and the job that he had done at Stanford, like, he was a rock star. And I think John Harbaugh thought, I could do that. I actually have more personality than Jim, but I can't find the NFL head coach now that I feel that way about, like I did with Harbaugh back in 2016. And if it's an assistant coach, like an Eric Bieniemy, Eric Bieniemy is going to be an NFL head coach, and he hasn't gotten that job yet, but he's going to. So when they're that young, the NFL is just a tricky place. It's a tricky place. Someone pointed out, well, you know, look at Arizona State right now. Look at Herm Edwards. I mean, Herm Edwards is 15-13 overall in 2 years. He's 66 years old. And his recruiting ranks behind Matt Campbell at Iowa State and Les Miles at Kansas. Seriously, Herm Edwards' recruiting class in 2021 ranks below Kansas's. I don't know what to do with that. That doesn't get me super excited about what you know what I mean? Like the NFL coaching thing just is tricky. So most of my focus is on college guys. And I went with names at first kind of in order as they popped into my head. The first one is Iowa State's Matt Campbell. My thing about Campbell is this. I think he's the closest thing to a young Urban Meyer as you'll find in college football. I think that his background is similar to Urban Meyer, although Urban Meyer really came up through Notre Dame and kind of the Lou Holtz coaching tree, if you will. I can remember doing radio with former Minnesota Vikings offensive lineman Mike Rosenthal and talking about having Urban Meyer as a position coach when he was at Notre Dame. Little bit of a different background with Campbell, but you know, he comes up through the MAC. He's the best coach in the Big 12, unless you think it's Lincoln Riley. But I call him the best coach in the Big 12 right now because he's likely to be the Big 12 coach of the year this year. He's already won it twice in the last 3 years, which means three of the last four seasons, Matt Campbell's been the Big 12 coach of the year. That's hard to do, man. That is hard. I mean, it's hard to do at Iowa State, but it's hard to do when you've done it before. The expectations rise. And what it continues to say about Matt Campbell is no matter what happens to his team or his program, and no matter what people think his team's going to look like, he's coaching his team up to the point where people at the end of the year are like, man, he did a great job. I don't know what that's like covering a coach. That was not Mac Brown. There was never a season. I mean, you know, it's not that Mac, you know, after 1998, I suppose, after Mac Brown's initial season at Texas, there really weren't any other seasons where at the end of it, everybody was like, Mac just did the best job of everybody. Maybe 2008. But, you know, Leach did as good of a job in 2008 as Mac did. You know, I don't even remember who won the 2008 Coach of the Year. Could have been Stoops. And I don't know that at the end of the year, everybody, other than that Texas Tech team, because that was all Leach and Texas, even though I think Mac and Muschamp got more credit than Mac did for that. It's just, I've never covered Texas and three out of four seasons had someone say, my God, the head coaching on that team was phenomenal. That's as good as it gets in the Big 12. That's who Matt Campbell is. And he knows the Big 12. So the one guarantee on the box you're getting with Matt Campbell, if you hire him from Iowa State, is that he takes over Texas next year. He knows the entire conference frontwards and backwards. I think that's important. And he knows this Texas team pretty well. He knows the players. So it's funny because I've seen people do this thing and I feel like it would be insulting for Tom Herman if he heard this podcast. But if we were to rank the coaches in the Big 12 right now, look, forget about where we put Urban Meyer. I mean, Freudian's up there. Forget about where we put Matt Campbell and Lincoln Riley, right? They're one and two. Gundy's three. He's earned that, right? You know, I mean, Gary Patterson, you'd have to rank above Herman right now based on the fact that he keeps on beating Herman. So even if you could get yourself to a place where you're like, you know what? Even if you thought Herman was fourth, even if you're like, look, I can't justify ranking him above Riley, above Campbell, and above Mike Gundy, but I'll put Herman fourth. What I'm telling you is the upgrade that you're making is that you're replacing the fourth best coach in the Big 12 with either the first or the second. It's an upgrade. Now, the question about Matt Campbell that I think everybody at Texas would have is, can he recruit? I don't know. But I didn't know that about Urban Meyer either. And one of the interesting things about me is that I've been covering recruiting long enough that I was in the business when Urban Meyer went from Utah to Florida. And I had doubts. I had doubts that that guy could go from Utah to Florida and immediately be able to go blow for blow, hand-to-hand combat against the Alabamas and the Tennessees and, you know, the LSUs of the world. I had real doubts. But obviously, history has proven that Urban Meyer ended up being a pretty good recruiter. I also know this. He can't do worse than what Tom Herman's about to do next year in recruiting as a lame duck coach that every recruit in the country who he tries to talk to has been told he ain't going to be there after next year. I mean, it is what it is. Okay, so that's Campbell. And I got to be honest, just doing this bit of a podcast, I'm all right with Matt Campbell. That is an upgrade. There's no getting around. He's a better coach than Tom Herman. Do you know why? Because everybody that follows the Big 12 agrees. And he's getting ready to do what Tom Herman didn't do. He got to the Big 12 championship game this year. He did it by beating Oklahoma, by beating Texas, with scrub recruits. Scrub recruits. So I can talk myself into Matt Campbell real easy. I think everybody listening to this podcast, common sense should tell them, okay, Matt Campbell would be a good hire. Okay, number two, Penn State's James Franklin. Oh, I think a lot of you are going to be like, fuck that. Look, I personally like James Franklin. I think he's a really good coach. I don't know how dynamic he is, but I think he's a really good coach. What he did at Vanderbilt was, for me, nothing short of sensational. Because if you've ever been to Vanderbilt, from the stadium to their facilities to the fact that it's Vanderbilt. Good school. It's like Rice. That's exactly what it is. Vanderbilt is Rice. It's just in the SEC. It's like Rice when the Southwest Conference existed, but not nearly as high profile. Much more difficult than if you're at Rice and you've got Ben Emanuel and Trevor Cobb in the backfield. Franklin, coming into this season, absolute consensus top 10 coach in the country. Matter of fact, one of the things I did, I think yesterday, Monday, was I did a search on best coaches in the country. I just wanted to, was I forgetting anybody? Because I had looked at it by salary, and because Notre Dame doesn't have to officially report Brian Kelly's salary, I didn't see his name, and I just slip of the mind. So I went, all right, let me get somebody's official list, and let me just see who's out there. What does it look like? And you scan through the top 20, and a lot of it, you're like, oh, I don't know. Which, I mean, there's a premium on those top 2, 3, 4, 5 guys. But Franklin was a guy that, I want to say I looked at a Sporting News list and maybe an SI.com list, and in the top 10 for both. He's a guy that Chris Del Conte loves. That's what we hear behind the scenes. I can't make the case for James Franklin over Matt Campbell, but I can make the case that if Matt Campbell weren't available, Franklin's a better option at this point than Herman because of the sunken collateral damage that exists from the last 2 months with Tom Herman and the eyes of Texas and the aftermath of losing back-to-back games against TCU and Oklahoma after almost losing to Texas Tech. I mean, remember, this should have been a 1-3 start. That Tech game, that was a Hail Mary kind of thing. It onside kick. That was a game where I had written my post-game story with Texas losing, only to delete the whole damn thing because they found a way to make that happen. You know, they could very easily, instead of 6-3 right now, justifiably be 5-4. Franklin, I think, is a good coach. I think that he's been hit or miss as a recruiter. he's not been a, I think he would recruit okay. I think it would be imperative that James Franklin be given an open checkbook and the ability. Now, it's real quick with Franklin. When he took the, one of the, I remember when he took the Vanderbilt jobs, when he took the Penn State job, from Vanderbilt, at around the same time Herman took the Texas job, and at around the same time Sark, who we'll get to in a second, Steve Sarkisian, took the USC job. One of the real question marks about what happened at Texas was how many guys did Tom Herman bring over from his U of H staff to the Texas staff? And what I wanted to get a read on was, how typical is it for college head coaches to take the overwhelming majority of their staff with them from one place to another? When, if I remember doing it, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but I remember that Sark and Franklin both took more assistants from their locations to their new locations than Herman did by like one or two. I want to say that seven of James Franklin's initial hires at Penn State were guys from his Vanderbilt staff. So one of my questions with Franklin would be, are you bringing your entire staff with you from Penn State? Because those guys, there aren't a lot of guys on that staff that rank in most people's estimations as nationally elite recruiters or maybe nationally elite coordinators. And I think if you were going to hire Franklin, it would have to be with the idea that, look, coach, you can bring some of your guys. That's natural. But the number of guys you bring with you among the nine assistant coaches that you can have, 10, is five. But we got to go out and get some hired guns that really elevate who you're working with those final five spots. I think that would be my thing with Franklin. If I thought Franklin was going to be armed with just absolute bazookas as recruiters and coordinators, I absolutely trust as a head coach, he would do a really good job. He's a very good head football coach at this level. He is brisket and potato salad, man. He's as basic as it gets in a lot of ways, which there's a lot about Matt Campbell that's like that. You know, those two guys aren't flashy, but Urban Meyer's not flashy. Urban Meyer's blood and guts, man. Nick Saban is blood and guts. Now, hell, Saban's offense right now is more wide open than almost any of these guys, but it wasn't always like that. He is traditional pro style I formation, run it between the tackles, and it has developed into something else as the wide receiver and quarterback talent have gone from, well, Greg McElroy to what it is now and what it has been for the last four or five seasons. So it really, for me, it's all about the packaging with Franklin. And you know what? Some of that conversation is probably got to be true of Campbell, although because he hasn't had a shot at a big time program yet, you couldn't push too much, I think, on Campbell. But I think he would have to understand, we're going to give you a really big checkbook. Go find guys that recruit that you're comfortable with. Got to have them. All right. If Campbell is one for me, and then I did Franklin, but I'm lukewarm on Franklin, unless I know he's surrounded by hosses. I really like the idea of Clemson offensive coordinator Tony Elliott. He's 41. He is a bona fide. Everybody talks about Mario Cristobal as a recruiter. And Mario Cristobal is probably one of the top five recruiters I can think of historically in college football. He's been doing it forever. I've told this story numerous times lately. I remember when Mac and Texas were in their pump in 2005. And Reggie Youngblood was a guy that was Texas's number one target. Offensive line target in the 2005 recruiting class. And Texas went to the Rose Bowl and beat Michigan, and Cristobal came down to Houston and took Reggie Youngblood away from Texas. That's baller. He can recruit, man. Tony Elliott can recruit. He is a National Recruiter of the Year candidate year in and year out. He is big time. He's been sharing the offensive coordinator duties at Clemson for the last couple of years. He's the standalone offensive coordinator right now. 41, A-plus recruiter. He's at Clemson, so he's learning under Dabo. He's been at least a co-offensive coordinator for one of the best offenses in the country, Trevor Lawrence, all of that stuff that they've had in recent years. Last half decade, that's all him. He is the Lincoln Riley of college football for me. He ticks a ton of boxes. He's a rising star. It's about who's going to take the chance to give the rising star the place where he gets his rise. And if we're looking to draw a comparison, I think he's a more dynamic and proven version of what everybody thought Tom Herman was at Houston. So for me, of the guys I'm going to talk about, Campbell and Elliott rank above Franklin for me. I think it would be gutsy to hire Elliott. I think it goes against everything that I've been saying Texas needs to do, which was go out and get an Urban Meyer type guy. Stop taking chances. Well, beggars can't be choosy. There are only a few guarantees on the boxes in college football. Texas has positioned itself where it has to make a change. This isn't about, well, kind of like Tom Herman more than Tony Elliott, you know, blah, blah. That's not an option. Chris Del Conte made sure that bringing back Tom Herman was not an option with his actions over the course of the last 2 months. Chris Del Conte, for me, is as responsible for the loss of Quinn Ewers as Tom Herman is. And they both own, I'm not saying it's all Del Conte, but he plays a part in that. Because Ewers' decision was completely related to what was happening with the eyes of Texas. And if Del Conte had given cover for Herman, even if he was pissed at Herman, the smart move is, hey, behind the scenes, I'll drive anybody under the bus. But in front of the public, take the bullet. Make people think you're brave. What Chris Del Conte needed to do was protect his asset, not diminish its value. That's the only thing Chris Del Conte almost has to do as at least one of the only things he has to do. He has to make sure that his most valuable asset doesn't depreciate. And if it does depreciate, it can't be at your own hand. Tom Herman gets blamed for the eyes of Texas. The fan base gets crazy. They're all blaming Tom. They think the players are running all over him. And Del Conte, instead of stepping up and saying, hey, guys, we've made some mistakes. And we're going to fix it. And we're going to get it right. If anybody has any questions about what we haven't done, don't ask Coach Herman. He's coaching football. This is difficult. You know, we can all sit here and second guess how this thing should be executed, but that dude's got 50 black players on his team. That's four times as many as any other sport on campus. So, you know, let's appreciate the difficulty of trying to get a consensus agreement on how an entire group should act when an entire group is 100 plus people. Chris Del Conte could have easily have done that, but he got mad at Herman and he drove Herman under the bus, and now there's no turning back. So I've got Elliott and Campbell. To me, Elliott is shiny. He is the new toy. For me, like, Tony Elliott is the PS5. For me, Matt Campbell is like a gift certificate, like an Amazon gift certificate for $1,000. They might roughly be worth the same thing. One looks cooler. The other one, you can do a lot of things with. You know, what'd you do with your $1,000 Amazon gift certificate? Oh, you know, I bought some clothes and, you know, I bought my wife a present. You know, there was some, I ended up getting like 10 things. Oh, served a lot of purposes. It was a good gift. Yep. It's not quite the same as I got a PS5. I got one. You didn't. To me, Elliot's got a little bit more PS5 vibe. Say that fast real quick. And to me, Elliot is more Campbell's a little bit more guarantee on the box, but not as shiny, right? It's not that box isn't a PS5, but it delivers the goods. My number four name, and this one for me is ranks last among all the names I'll give you, is Steve Sarkisian. He's the younger version of Gary Kubiak. He's a former two-time college head. He's coached at Washington. He's coached at USC. He's been an NFL offensive coordinator. He's been the Alabama offensive coordinator for the last 2 years. That Alabama offense, hella fun. So, and he's 46, and he can recruit lights out. He more than any of these guys, truly is like Tom Herman reincarnated. They're exactly the same guy. You know who Steve Sarkisian is? He's Tom Herman after Tom Herman rehabilitates himself after getting ousted from Texas. Oh, Herman goes to Alabama or wherever and potentially does the same thing, coordinates for a couple of years, raises his profile, and suddenly everything he did at Texas looks kind of good. Looks like it can be improved on, just like you look at Sark and you go, God, none of those USC years ever amounted to anything. But he could recruit, and now, like, he's more ready now. 2 years under Saban, that's what he needed. That's the case with Sark. And it's not the worst case in the world. It's Tom Herman without recruiting problems. That's who Sark is. He's Tom Herman without 2021, 2022, 2023 recruiting problems. That's an upgrade over Herman because of the situation that he's in. Finally, my fifth name, and I can't believe he doesn't get mentioned more often. I think Brian Harsin of Boise State, you know, former University of Texas offensive coordinator for a season. Just close your eyes and listen to these records. 12-2, 9-4, 10-3, 11-3, 10-3, 12-2, 4-1. Listen to where he finishes in his conference every year. First, second, first, 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 first. First of all, I think Texas knows Harsin, and I think Harsin was really impressive in his 1 year here at Texas. You have to remember, he came in after Greg Davis. He came in after that 2010 disaster, the disaster of them trying to go pro style and go away from the spread, and they wanted to get Garrett Gilbert under all of that. He came after all of that mess. He dealt with cooks in the kitchen and Major Applewhite and Mac. He dealt with all of that stuff and was able to walk out of this town with his head held high. We didn't really get a chance to see Brian Harsin at his best, but I think we got a chance to know Brian Harsin. He was impressive. Now, it's been almost a decade since he's been in Austin, and all he's done is emerge as one of the best coaches in the country. Maybe the best coach in the country, not at a Power 5 school. Again, he's won 12 games, 9 games, 10 games, 11 games, 10 games, 12 games, may win 9 games this year, not including the bowl game. His teams are always ranked. You know, there's only so far he can take Boise State unless they're absolutely undefeated. But that team's ranked, that team wins double-digit wins, and no matter who comes and goes, they win. And he develops talent. The NFL goes to Boise all the time. So, I like Brian Harsin as a candidate. And, you know, I don't know how much Brian Harsin liked Texas when he left, because it was not the best place to be. But he knows Texas. He would know that he would have a chance to truly take the next step in his career at Texas. So for me, Harsin would be high on the list for me. To me, there's no knock on Harsin. If you know that Harsin can bring in a few, one of the things we're going to say with all these guys is coaching staff, coaching staff, coaching staff. Who's on the staff? What heavy hitters have been hired in recruiting? Got to get some guys with some Texas experience that knows the high school scene. But to me, that's the case with everybody. I mean, even Matt Campbell would have to do that. And he does recruit inside the state of Texas more than any of these guys. I mean, everybody, Franklin, Sark, Harsin, all these guys have recruited Texas, but they'd have to bring in some guys like Herman did. I mean, Herman had to get a Dallas guy. And so he brought in Tim Beck. People forget Tim Beck was a really successful high school coach in the Metroplex before he went into college coaching. You know, you got to make better moves than that, but they had to be made in that same vein. Hire a guy who's got a rep for being a really good recruiter, who knows the area really, really well. Like, those are winning moves. But I think that's where that's after you've kicked the tires on a Brian Kelly or a Dan Mullen, right? I mean, you might as well ask, you might as well talk to their agents and say, what if we offered you $12 million? Like, would that do anything? Because we got $12 million. We offer saving, Freudian slip there. That's a couple of Freudian slips in this podcast. We offered $12 million for Urban Meyer. We can give Dan Mullen $12 million. They wouldn't like it, but they could. And if they didn't want to take it, okay, cool. We're not going to do it. But we at least we asked. Don't ever say nobody asked to give you $12 million a year, because we did. Or 10 or whatever. Honestly, they need to. I know it's a pandemic, and I've been at the forefront of, well, you got to be careful with. No, Texas now. Texas was ready to do it with Urban Meyer. Now they just need to be ready to do it. And the important thing is that they do it. The important thing is that Plan B can't be, well, I don't know, it's hard. Can't be, man. That's not the job. The job is not to be Plan B less. The job is to make sure that Plan B is as close to Plan A as humanly possible. And if you got to go to Plan C, Plan C is as close to Plan B and Plan A as humanly possible. Chris Del Conte gets paid $1.7 million a year to have a Plan B. The moment calls for a Plan B. The moment calls for action. The moment does not call for I don't knows, it's really hard, I don't know if we can do it. If that's the answer, Texas got to find a new athletic director and a new everything at that point.